and bills start getting paid. So we don't end up with a vast amount of stuff. Now, if your home group isn't contributing, suggest it. I mean, does my home group contribute? Check with the news office from central office. And they come out every month and they say what different groups are contributing. If your group isn't listed, there's a chance it's not contributing. And so how do you get it to contribute? Quick business meeting. You say, it's time we start. Well, we could only send in $5. Send it. If a lot of places sent in $5, we would not be in the red. Okay. Very practical stuff. So take care of that this week, would you? I mean, only a little over half the groups participate. Only a little, barely half of the AA groups participate in this stuff. You know, I think that's kind of a scandal. Let me see. It then says, experience has often warned us that nothing can so surely destroy our spiritual heritage as futile disputes over property, money, and authority. Now, as an ex-teacher, I just want to point out to you the nice way that ended. It ended, futile disputes over property, money, and authority, as step six started, problems of property, money, and authority may. It's just kind of nicely tucked in. You know, one ends as the other finishes, or one ends as the other starts, that's better. I just think that's graceful, and hooray for whoever thought of that. So, okay. Last week, we talked some about steps 1, 2, and 3, and I talked some about being restored to sanity, and talked a little bit about normal, is that true? Whatever normal looks like. Did we solve that problem for people last week? We didn't solve that problem. Well, let me throw out a couple of rules of thumb here. Because normal is one of those funny words. You see, it means a lot of things and never quite the same to more than one person. So, normal, I went into therapy when I was about 3 months sober. And I saw a wise doctor in Berkeley, and we talked about a lot of things. And on one occasion, having discussed sex and American family, religion, God, AA, alcoholism, feelings, and the truth, you know, all the big subjects, I turned to him and I said, Leonard, do you think I'm normal? Okay, the big question. And he looked at me with wise Jewish eyes and said, normal is 98.6. This is a very important concept. You see? Because a lot of us just don't know that. What we think is normal is conformity. And it's not. Conformity is pretty dull, just between the, 300 of us. It's just a real dull way of spending time. So normal is 98.6. Or normal is whatever goes on in your neighborhood. Okay. Depending on the neighborhood, a lot of different stuff goes on. I get to travel a lot, and about 2 years ago, I was invited to Montgomery, Alabama, to talk at the Heart of Dixie Conference. Now, I've never been there before. That's totally new territory to me. And I got in, people were absolutely gracious, but normal is different there. I was there a few moments, and someone said, they knew I was a tourist, and they said, have you been to the steps of the Capitol to see the place where President Davis was sworn in? He's dead for 100 years, but he's still the president, you know. I said no. Then someone else asked, well, have you been to the Episcopal Church there off the Capitol where President Davis used to go every Sunday morning and pray during the war of Northern aggression? I said, oh, really? And then I heard two women talking, and they said, I hear our speakers are Yankee. Now, That's all perfectly normal for them. And it works for most of them, I guess. And a lot of it's none of my business. And I don't want to live there. And I get to live somewhere else. Moving is not always a bad idea, you see. I mean, sometimes geographics really work. And if you're living in a place where you feel like the weirdest one in creation, move to another neighborhood, you know. My neighborhood is real mixed, and I like that. We have churchgoers and non-churchgoers. We have Baptists and Muslims. We have elderly retired white people and Iranians, and we have people next door, a black couple with three little girls that go to Catholic school and six priests. Now, we think that's a perfectly normal neighborhood. And no one, you know, kind of, I like that. I choose to live there. So, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. I used to think that sanity meant normalcy. If I only get sane, I'll be normal. Well, what's sanity is a Latin word, or this is from a Latin word. The word is sanus, and it means healthy. So sanity, if someone is sane, they're emotionally and psychologically healthy. Well, what do they look like? Good question. I asked Leonard. I said, Leonard, I've always had sickness fantasies my whole life, where I have lain in bed at night and felt the cancer grow. I've imagined brain cells being destroyed. I know it's cholera. I know it's diphtheria. I know it's smallpox. I know it's AIDS. I know I just had a stroke and we won't know it for days. I mean, this is... My brain just goes like this for a long time. So sickness fantasies I've had, but I had no fantasy about healthy. You see? So how do you know when you've met one? And Leonard said, healthy people are basically capable of doing three kinds of things. Number one, healthy people are capable of working. Work. Number two, healthy people are capable of loving. And number three, healthy people are capable of playing. If you know somebody who can work, love, and play, you know someone who's a pretty healthy human being. And he says, now, that doesn't mean you're doing all three on the same day. In fact, you might go through cycles of working for a period, then playing for a period, then loving for a period. But a healthy person is basically capable of doing all three. And I said, go on. You know, I'm waiting for something I can identify with. And he said, well, Tom, what your alcoholism did was it destroyed your ability to work. He said, you couldn't, you know, you didn't show up to the classroom very often. Well, that's just because of that stupid law in California that says you're supposed to be there if the kids are. Very restrictive. And I told him I could, too, show up. And he said, I'm talking about 3 days in a row. Picky. But that was true. Not only that, you were supposed to show up on time and prepared. Not always easy when I was so busy the night before. So that whole area of my life was affected. By the way, on work, I want to point out that a lot of work is not paid for. A lot of times, we think it's work if you get a check each month or every 2 weeks. And that's just not true. There's a lot of unpaid work going on. You see? I love quiz shows where they ask Mrs. Jones and they say, and what do you do? And she says, oh, I'm just a housewife. Well, how do you spend your day? Oh, taking care of a husband and 9 other children, you know, but it's not work as far as she's concerned because she's not being paid for it. Well, excuse me, that's work. That's real, honest to goodness work. So that's just true. Now, with that being said, I think the two things essential for having a job. Number one, you have to be able to show up on time. Whenever that is, if that's once a week or seven times a week or once every 3 weeks, you have to be able to show up on time. One, two, once there, you have to be able to do the things you've agreed to do. If you can do those two things, you can work. Now, that's pretty sophisticated. And some of us can't do that for a year or two or three, you see. And that's perfectly understandable. I worked for a while. I was running a group every Thursday afternoon at a men's recovery house in San Francisco. And it was for folks who were just coming into recovery, and they were dry or they were sober, and they came in and they kind of got adjusted, and getting the job was big. Now, this is real big in our culture. I know it's very important for men. I presume it's very important for women, but I haven't had that experience this time through. So just on a man's kind of, without a job, a lot of us males don't have an identity. And unemployment is not just unemployment. It really hits us hard where we live. And the fact is true, too, in dealing with alcohol. When does a man hit bottom? A lot of men lose their health, and it doesn't bother them. I mean, it does, but, you know, men can take that. You lose your family, and that hurts, but you're not done yet. And you know you've hit bottom when you've been fired from your job. And that's just true with an awful lot of men, and that's just because we are more stupid than women. Okay. And so the job thing, work thing, is real important to us. And anyway, at the recovery house in San Francisco, getting a job is a crucial for dignity and self-respect and your recovery. And we had a guy there who used to be, university hotshot, nuclear whiz-bang character, made a lot of money and was published in Picture and Time magazine. Well, it had been a few years since he had held down a job because he had a little problem with booze and Demerol, which kind of take up the whole day, you know, if you're doing it. And he hadn't had steady work in about 8 years. And he got a job, and the job was selling donuts at one of those places in downtown San Francisco, and he showed up every day for work on time for 9 days in a row. And on the 9th day, we just burst into wild applause because this was a man who was clearly going into recovery. You know? And he but he was kind of embarrassed because he was saying, but I should be doing so much better. Showing up for work on time is graduate level recovery. You know, it's real impressive. Okay.